You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Welcome back to CHGO Bears After Dark, presented by Circa Sports. Make sure you hit up the Circa Sports app for all your gambling needs. You got the Packers coming up here in a little bit. Rooting for the Giants because now we've turned our attention away from rooting against the Panthers and rooting against all these teams that have the number one, number two, and number three pick, because it seems like that's all but locked up at this point. And now all of a sudden, Corey, we turn our attention to rooting against teams that are in the playoff picture. Somehow, some way, the Bears have won five of their last nine games. They're 5-4. And they're just at the edge of the in the hunt graphic. But I can tell you from my extensive research last night, Corey, that there are a lot of different scenarios where the Bears can run the tape. They have to run the table, but if they do, there are an abundance of scenarios where the Bears could make the playoffs. Can you believe it, Corey Wooten?
Brad, could this be a situation like last year's Lions, right? Towards the end of the season, they're playing very consistent football defensively, offensively. They figured things out. Could that be a situation? Could that be?
I mean, honestly, it sounds funny, but I mean, come on. What were the Lions? 1-6, 1-7 to start their season last year? And I'm sure at the time, Lions fans probably had a lot of questions about Dan Campbell, a lot of questions about the direction of the franchise.
Jared
and then Goff, all of a sudden, right? Everything. And then all of a sudden, something turned. They started playing with a little more attitude. They finished the season strong. And then all of a sudden, they get to the last week of the season, and going into that Sunday, they had a chance to make the playoffs. But before the game had even started, they were eliminated from playoff contention, but they were playing the Packers. And Dan Campbell said, "We don't care that we're not making the playoffs. We're going to keep the Packers out of the playoffs." Mm-hmm. And they went out and ended Aaron Rodgers' career in Green Bay. And you know what? It's not impossible that a similar scenario, it seems unlikely when you talk about it, it sounds silly where you talk, when you consider where this team has come from this season. And, you know, as someone that's very fanatical like me, sometimes you lose sight of the long journey that is a season, because baseball is 162 games, basketball is 82 games, but football, you only get 17 games and it goes so quick. But at the same time, there is a journey to this, and all of a sudden the Bears find themselves on a bit of an uptick. And if they find their way to beat Cleveland, now you run into two home games, not getting too far ahead of the schedule. We'll get into it tonight, where you're playing the Arizona Cardinals and the Atlanta Falcons, two dome teams coming to Chicago to play in cold weather. It sets up nicely. They got to take care of business this Sunday. We're going to get into all of it. But no, Corey, to answer your question with my long-winded answer, it could very well be a very Detroit Lions 2022 situation here.
Yeah, it's great to see, especially defensively. I think they're playing at an extremely high level, right? Number one rush defense, or number two, I don't know after this week what it is. But, you know, just the improvement in that area from last year to this past year is unbelievable. Now, all of a sudden, Montez Sweat comes in. And I know a lot of people were very critical of that pick. I've loved that pick from the beginning. I'm a huge Montez Sweat fan. His length, his strength, what he brings to the table. And we're just seeing that. And then look at some of the young guys like Jervon Dexter, Zach Pickens flashing in there. he's elevating everybody's game. Yannick had the big sack early on. So I think Montez Sweat is elevating everybody's game. And I talked about that rushing cover. We're finally starting to see a little bit of that, right? I think it's improving every week. We're seeing more pressure. We're seeing errant throws from quarterbacks. And before this game, I had said, listen, Jared Goff has a history of struggling against the Bears, even back to his Rams days. I don't know if you remember that 2018 when they came in town. It's cold. They're the hottest team in football. Sean McVay and company, Todd Gurley, all these guys, they shut him out. I think Jared Goff had 60 yards passing. Todd Gurley had 20. They wanted
Jared
to go home.
Jared Goff did not want to be there that night.
No, 100%. They didn't want to be there. I just think it's such a great matchup because Jared Goff is one of those quarterbacks. You saw the times he looked efficient and he looked good in this game, right? There's quick rhythm throws, the timing throws, 1, 2, 3, get the ball out. He loves to get the ball out quickly. And then what you saw is when you make him hold the ball and you get pressure in his face, he really struggles. There's a couple times he kind of looked a little bit like Sam Darnold, seeing ghosts out there, right? There was phantom pressure in there. He said, he got a little scared, Braggs. He did. He did.
Why does your Jared Goff impersonation sound like your impersonation of me at times? Why did that sound similar?
You and Jared Goff. I mean, y'all come from the same. No. this is my voice when people are struggling, I guess. I don't know.
Okay. Okay.
But that's what you see when any quarterback, right, really struggles against pressure. But there's some that can't handle the pressure at all. So it was great to see the Bears consistently start to get some pressure, especially with the front four. Right. And how about the big fella, Jervon Dexter, continues to improve. And Braggs, I've been saying this. Once he can really trust the pad level and the get off, it's really going to be a scary thing because he is doing
this.
What do you
mean by trust the get off? That sparked something in me.
Yeah. So when you talk about a Tampa 2 scheme, when you talk about an attacking style defense, especially up front, getting off the football, when I look at some of the best teams in all of football right now, San Francisco, Philly, you when that ball snap, look at the difference in get off between them and some other teams out there.
But why wouldn't he try? I understand because we've talked about this on the show here before, and I think it's well documented that he has a slow get off. But I guess I didn't realize it's about trusting the get off. I don't know what you mean by that specifically.
So when I say trust the get off, because a lot of times, remember when I was talking about a traditional defense, right? Everybody has a gap. And sometimes people have trouble trusting getting off the ball quickly because they think they're going to get out of their gap, right? But the whole thing about the Tampa 2, and I've explained this, is your penetration sets the edge. It gets in your gap, right? So if you drive your guy back 3 yards in the backfield, but maybe let's say you're reached or you're out of your gap, it doesn't matter because what is the running back going to do? He's going to go around that person. And then all of a sudden you can rally the troops. So penetration kills everything. So that's why I say trust it, because it goes against everything you're taught as a defensive lineman, right? Everything is gap discipline. Oh, I have B gap. I got to stay in the B gap. No. If I drive my guy back or I get penetration, I set a new edge right there. I set a new gap. So penetration kills everything. So that's what I'm saying. He's been so accustomed to that slower get off from the Florida days. And we watched the tape. It was like ball snapped, still in the stance. All of a sudden. And that's his coach's fault. But at this level, once you get off the football quickly, and especially a guy of his size, his quickness, his strength, he'll be unstoppable. Like, honestly, I really do. And I'm really starting to like this pick because I know early on I was like, you know, in a team that really needed a dominant three technique, a guy that was ready to play day one for this scheme, he wasn't that, right? But what we're seeing now is him improve every week. And we're seeing him, you know, get in the QB's face, getting sacks, getting penetration. And that's what I said. Once he's able to get off the ball consistently, it's going to be scary. It really will. So it's good to see him continuing to improve. And I think that's the Montez Sweat effect. I think he's elevating everybody's game.
Yeah.
I think it was a great pickup. And a lot of people were very critical on it. And I'm like, in my opinion, he's one of the most underrated defensive ends in the game for what he does in the run game. Always a top five run defender. Pressures, he's up there. Top 10 every year. This year, he's over 10 sacks. He has all the tools. Imagine when you put somebody opposite him, when they get a big splash in free agency or the draft opposite him.
Right.
This defense is going to be scary, Braggs. So we're going through scenarios where I was talking to Gabe Ramirez, who I do a show with on Sundays. And I told him, I said, I said, imagine this, right? Because I know everybody's been very critical about Eberflus, but the way this defense is playing, if they continue to do that, you have to keep Eberflus, right? The way this defense is playing, you add a defensive end, you add a three technique, and then all of a sudden, this defense is a top 10, top five defense. I really 100%. Do believe that.
No, I agree.
And then all of a sudden, when you look at offensively, offense is starting to come along. If you add a guy like Marvin Harrison Jr., like we were talking about, right? You add a center. All of a sudden, this offense is pretty scary with two dynamic number one weapons.
Yeah, no, it's exciting stuff. It really is, because you can feel it now. I said my observation in the game was like the first time they played the Lions, we were like all going crazy. We're like, holy shit, they're playing so well. You know, offense is dynamic. The defense getting all these turnovers, and it was just like this electric game, and they end up losing at the end. Then they come back home and they just beat the shit out of them. Like, it wasn't like we weren't really like going crazy, because it just felt methodical the way they kicked their ass in the second half. At halftime, there was some doubt creeping in because the Lions were able to take a lead, and they were slowing the Bears' tempo down. And then all of a sudden, in the second half, the Bears just took control. And that was my thing. It's like, okay, well, maybe the Lions aren't as good as they look to start the year. Maybe they're starting to find some flaws, but it's the ebb and flow of a season. I mean, even the Eagles right now are struggling. But at the same time, you feel that the Bears are elevating and rising with, like you said, with the return, or with the, you know, Montez Sweat entering the fold, this secondary coming together. I mean, one of my favorite moments of the game was the culmination of the whole defense. There was some motion on the left side, and Kyler Gordon tapped on his head to alert the pass off. They were playing man coverage, and it was Jalen Johnson, Tyree Stevenson, I believe, and Kyler Gordon. And they all just communicated in sync and passed it off beautifully and stuck to their guys. And then, oh, by the way, Jervon Dexter and Montez Sweat collapse the pocket, and there's a sack. And you kind of saw it all come together in that moment. It was like, wow. And to your point, if they add to what they have right, they're already stifling defense with just Montez Sweat. They're able to add more to that. I completely agree with you. The sky's the limit. Going into the game, I said, I don't know what to expect. I picked them to lose. And I'm frustrated that I couldn't stand on Meatball Island and pick them to win. But my problem was I was like, it's hard to predict this team because I don't know what team's going to come out on Sunday. Mm. But now we're starting to creep into a territory where I feel fairly confident knowing how they're going to play coming up against the Browns. Yep. I know this defense is going to give Joe Flacco problems. You know, like I'm starting to get to a point where they're playing consistent enough to where I have a decent idea of what to expect from them on Sunday.
Isn't it crazy how one player can really change this team? Because when Montez Sweat first came in here, right, the first game he was there, remember, we take it with a grain of salt, right? He's trying to understand the defense. He's not really playing fast. But the second game, third game, all of a sudden we see this defense elevate their level of play. And that's what we're seeing, a consistent team. And it's awesome to see. I predicted them to beat the Lions. I was very bold about it. I was like, Jared Goff, I'm not buying this Detroit team this year. Last year, the way they were playing the end of the season, 100%. But they're not the same team, right? Jared Goff does not look like himself. The defense is not that good, right? They kind of were struggling to generate pressure. I thought this was a great matchup. Even the first game, I picked them to win. Bears should have won that game, right? They got conservative at the end. But what I love about this is finally we saw Luke Getsy towards the end of the game being more aggressive, right? Especially when Justin Fields was getting him in a rhythm with some of his throws and passing game. You know, we saw in certain situations where normally he would run the football on third down, and he was passing the ball second down. He wasn't taking his foot off the pedal, and that's what I like. My main criticism of him was that third and two and then fourth and one. Because my thing is like this. If you have Blasingame, you have Foreman, you know he's going to get at least 2 to 3 yards falling forward. You got one of the best blocking tight ends ever to play in the NFL in Mercedes Lewis. Cole Kmet's a great blocker as well. Run the football downhill. You got two downs to get a first first down. I just didn't understand why they chose that. A quarterback power with Justin Fields and then a fake dive flip play, which doesn't make sense at all, right? You're going sideways to get 1 yard. On the goal line, I understand sometimes when you get in a situation where you're like fourth and goal on the one, right? Maybe do a bootleg or something like that to keep them honest with the option to pass the ball. But I just didn't understand that play. I thought that was a terrible two plays called back to back in that situation. Can't hear you, Britt.
You know, you'd think I'd know. you'd think I'd know that. My bad. But yeah, no, I agree. He was overthinking himself there. He's had several moments, Luke Getsy, this season where he's done that in short yardage situations. Denver being one of those games, which cost us a win. And mm-hmm. had they won that game, you know, even if you just take out the at Detroit game, because I feel like they could have won both. But let's just say they want take one of them, and let's just take the Denver game because they were up 28-3 at home. And then it becomes a game at the end, and you still have a chance to win, and you can't execute in short yardage. And then that comes back to rear its ugly head even yesterday. So, you know, there's still questions when it comes to Luke Getsy. It's not perfect, but when you have we learned this back in the day when you were playing defense for the Bears. You don't need your offense to be perfect when you have complementary football and the defense is putting you in good positions to score. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened several times yesterday. The defense keeps giving the ball back. And when you have a player like Justin Fields or Jay Cutler, yeah, they might make a couple mistakes. They might not pitch a perfect game, but the more chances you give them, the more explosive plays are going to happen. And they're bound to put up somewhere between 20 and 30 points. Typically, you know, if your defense is playing the way it has been. So that is what, when you hear Matt Eberflus talk about complimentary football, you're getting that here from this defense. Jalen Johnson, let's talk about him. Let's stick on the defense here for a little bit because I enjoy, you know, hearing your thoughts with how this Tampa 2 is coming together. Jalen Johnson's really pushing to get that bag, man. I mean, I know he said that.
What are they waiting for?
Well, because Jalen said after the trade deadline that he wasn't going to talk contract negotiations until after the season. If I was Ryan Poles, I would have, like, when he came in, Hallis Hall today, I would have been like, step let's right here. You know what I mean? Like, just try to give him a full court press and just see if you can change his mind to reward him.
Money talks, step, man. Yeah, money talks.
For stepping up the way he has. It's been so impressive lately.
The thing about it is, right, I think he maybe felt a little disrespected maybe by them not starting the negotiations earlier. And maybe he feels like, hey, at this point, I could maybe test the waters and see what may happen, right? But they have options to franchise him or whatnot. But I think it's a situation where money talks, right? And any player, right, if they get a big contract, they're going to sign it. Because at the end of the day, right, you never know in this game, right, knock on wood, you never know what may happen with any player. So you have to take a contract when it is. So when I played Johnny Knox, supposedly right before he got hurt, he got offered a contract that he turned down. So right before that game, he got hurt. What people had said that he got offered a contract right before that Seahawks game when he got injured. And it's just unfortunate.
That's brutal.
You know, and then he has that career ending injury, something that impacts him to this day, which is unfortunate. So in this game, if somebody's offering you money and hey, you could maybe get a little bit here or there from another team, but if they're offering you a significant amount of money that makes sense, you got to sign the deal.
Well, and I had made the point that I was like, well, maybe he doesn't even really want to play here. Like, he's pushing them, saying he's highballing them, saying, well, you can reset the cornerback market and I'll play for you. But I ain't giving you a team, you know, a hometown discount because you've sabotaged my numbers and I haven't been on a competitive team the last couple of years. So why would I want to stay here? I can go somewhere else and get the same amount of money and have a chance to play in the playoffs and put my ability on a bigger stage for people to know who I am. Cause I think outside of Chicago, most people probably don't know who Jalen Johnson is and how well he plays the cornerback position. But now all of a sudden vibes are high. Everybody's loving each other. You know, it feels like it's starting to turn the corner. I'm sure the players feel that they're, you know, they're dancing in the locker room after the game. You know, they got Chief Keef blasting on the loudspeaker. Well, hell, you know, use those good vibes to see if Jalen will come around and come up on your Poles has to come up on his price now. Now you can franchise tag him, but like we've talked about, that's only going to piss a player off. Yeah. And now you're going through a situation where he's holding out for who knows how long. And so I hope they do pay him at this point, because you just see things trending in such a positive direction, and it's exciting to see.
He's 24 years old. He's one of the better cover corners in the league. He's not even in his prime yet. So why not pay him, right? At this point, it only makes sense, because when you're having a team, you want to keep your homegrown talent, right? They're able to do that with Cole Kmet, right? Hopefully that could work out with Jalen Johnson, right? Some of these really talented players, and if Justin Fields continues to flourish and they decide to keep him and he does great next year, same thing. You want to keep your homegrown talent, right? That's a big thing, because then it looks good on your part. You're able to develop these guys. You're able to keep them and retain them and have them play majority, or if not their whole career. For the team. So I think that's ideally, and that's what you saw when I was playing. A lot of those guys, like Peanut Tillman, yeah, he went to Carolina at the end, but most of his career he was there. Lance Briggs as well. Brian Urlacher, obviously, you know, they kind of kicked him out, which is unfortunate. But
I've seen Brian twice now. I saw him just here the other day.
Yep.
At Bernie's Book Bank banquet on Saturday, and we interviewed him like a few weeks ago. He's not saying Devin shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame, but he keeps messing with me.
He's critical. He's critical.
He keeps messing with me about him. And yeah. I'm like, Brian, I'm going to put you in a figure four leg lock. Like, it's my guy, Devin.
So,
yeah.
So hold on.
You know, come on now.
You're going to put Lack in.
Who's going to win, me or Brian? You have to consider my emotional, like, I, you know, like when a mom gets so strong to save their child, they can like lift a car. Like, yeah. That's how I feel for Devin Hester.
I don't care about your emotional damage. I don't care about that. All right. Yo, Brian Urlacher will wax that. You know what? Come on, bro. Stop playing, man.
Nah, but, he's been a good sport, but I have been busting his ass.
No, but that's what you want to do. You look at, like, for years, right? You know, different successful teams like the Patriots, they were able to keep a lot of their talent, right? They were able to draft well,
right?
Free agents that they kept. I think that's just a mark of a good team. Green Bay for years, right? They were able to draft, developed some really good talent, you know, offense, defensive side of the ball. It's just like for a while, the Bears were not doing that, right? I think after Lovie Smith left, the Trestman era after that, you know, it was kind of tough to really get things going on. You know, for a while, it was like there weren't as many players that they were drafting that they were keeping for second or third contracts. So
yep,
you got to pay the man at this point.
I agree. Jay Grizz in the chat said, yeah, I agree. Jay Grizz in the chat says, honestly, with Sweat back there, he'll make a lot of DBs look good with that pressure he's putting on DBs. Yeah, I agree. But like we talk about, it's complementary football, not just complimentary for offense and defense, but complimentary pass rush and you know, secondary or coverage, you know, and so yeah, that, I don't think that's a knock on him to say they brought in a pass rusher, so that's helping him. They should have a pass rusher. I mean, last year the Bears had only 10 sacks from their defensive line, the lowest total from a Bears defensive line in franchise history. That takes a huge hit on what the secondary's capability of production can be. Then you take them into a negotiation room and say, well, you haven't gotten enough production. Oh, bullshit. Exactly. And now you get Montez Sweat in here and now Jay Grizz is saying, now all of a sudden he's got how many picks since Montez Sweat has gotten here? Well, that's proof in the pudding. Put good talent around him to play complimentary football, and you'll get to see a more fair evaluation of who the player is.
I mean, you can say that about any position, right? A quarterback is depending on his offensive line.
Peyton Manning, look how many Hall of Famers Peyton Manning had around him. Reggie Wayne, Marshall Faulk, you know.
Kurt Warner, right, when he ran that.
Marvin
that
Harrison, Mike Martz senior
team. think about to run a seven-step drop. You have to have some dudes at offensive line to run a seven-step drop. Kurt Warner in those Mike Martz days. That's why that stuff never worked in Chicago, because pass rushers are so good And then if you don't have the offensive line that are Pro Bowl after Pro Bowl guys, you know, Orlando Pace type guys, it's tough to protect the seven-step drop.
Right. No, I agree. Matt Nagy, who's our resident troll, saying Peyton Manning, you spelled Peyton wrong, but you did spell it Walter Payton style. Peyton Manning made those guys Hall of Famers. Matt, I get it. But it's one hand washes the other, and you're diminishing the talent of those players around him too. There's nothing wrong. You doesn't have to just be one Hall of Famer on the team. You can have four. You can't sit here and say those players wouldn't have been good out to Marshall Faulk not being good outside of Peyton Manning. I doubt it. I'm sure he would have been fine.
What about Tom Brady? He's a guy that really made guys good.
Yes.
Talk about, he never played with a Hall of Fame receiver. I mean, Randy Moss was towards the end of.
That's why I always liked Tom more than Peyton. Yeah. And Tom would beat Peyton, and Peyton had the greatest show every year with the best players. And Tom didn't have any of that. Tom had a guy who was his best wide receiver who also played cornerback, you know, before he got like Randy Moss and Rob Gronkowski and those guys.
Yep, exactly. Like you look at Wes Welker and Edelman and a lot of those guys, like, They were great for that scheme, but in terms of being, Armadillo.
Danny Armadillo.
Amendola. He is from Texas, though. That's a good one. Yeah. He had a lot of, like, unsung heroes. Chris Hogan, right? That had a really great career, former lacrosse player. But, like, no Hall of Fame, Pro Bowler, every year consistent type of guys, right? Like, I'm trying to think of, like, Julian Edelman. Did he make the Pro Bowl quite often? Maybe a year or two? Like, I think he wasn't consistently. I don't think he was consistently a Pro Bowler. I think maybe Wes Welker was for a couple years here or there, but most of them have just been very good complementary players, and they work well for that scheme. So, speaking of offense, what'd you think of Fields and how he played in this game?
Yeah, because it's interesting because you've been 10 toes down for Justin Fields here, and I've been like all over the place. I got people saying that I'm hedging and I won't stand on, one side of this, and it's hard. So, I agree with Adam Hoge yesterday. He said you can win with Justin Fields. He's proven that, and I don't think it's denigrating him by saying put a good defense around him, put a good team around him, and he's going to be good enough to win you a football game. I think that's true. And that should be true of any team. As unfair as it, because I'm doing my best, Corey. Like, it's Victory Monday. Yesterday, we do the post game show. And literally, the last thing I want to talk about now is what they're going to do with the number one pick. It's literally the last thing I want to do now. I want to see how this season plays out the rest of the way. And put all that discussion to the side. The number one pick is a 95% chance of being locked in at this point. So the decision is coming. Mm-hmm. But what Justin Fields did yesterday was showed a lot of toughness, showed dynamic playmaking ability to break out of broken pockets that most quarterbacks would not be able to. I mean, he was dead to rights for almost a safety and turns it into a 30-yard gain. I don't think there's many players that could do that, if any. He's got the strength and speed combination that is rare that you see at that position. Then he also has the arm talent. He can make any throw on the field. He's shown that time and again. And the DJ Moore throw, while that was a free play, that was a frozen rope to DJ Moore, a perfect throw. He had a couple, the Darnell Mooney throw to the sidelines was one of his more impressive throws of the game, where he just drove the football, stepped into it, and it was a rocket past the DB's hand. Now, were there times where he took a sack that he shouldn't have, or he missed a player on a throw, or he didn't get through his progressions fast enough and he was holding on to the ball too long? Yes, there were those moments. And so, but at the end of the day, you watch anybody else around the league. You watch Josh Allen for the Bills, or you watch all these. I mean, they're not pitching a perfect game. Mm-hmm. So I've come to the conclusion that I almost, like, I'm happy we have the number one pick, and I'll trust Ryan Poles to make whatever decision he makes. But it's almost kind of irritating now that they have the number one pick, because I don't know if any of us, including me, would be grading him so harshly on every single play, every single mistake, highlighting every single great play as this sign of, he's the guy, and every bad play, all right, he's not the guy. I don't think we would be acting like this if we didn't have the number one pick. So now I'm just trying to take a step back. They've fought their way back into playoff contention. Yep. You have an opportunity to win four winnable games to end the year. And that's what I want to see. And if he wins every game like he did yesterday, I personally would be more than fine with them rolling into next year with Justin Fields as their quarterback. And you draft Marvin Harrison, or you trade it back for three first round picks and Max Crosby. As I said to you a couple weeks ago, and then I'll let you go. Any of these scenarios you break down to me, I think have intrigue for this team to be good because the roster is really starting to build. So if that's Justin Fields behind center, I think they're going to have an opportunity to really make a leap next year. If it's not, I still think they're going to have an opportunity to make a leap, but I just don't even want to talk about that shit anymore because the Bears won yesterday. It's Victory Monday. The Bears are somehow in the hunt by this sliver of hope. And I just want to enjoy this week. Then they lose to the Browns. Then we're back out of it. And now we can go back to arguing about who the quarterback's going to be. But for this week, God damn it, they're in the hunt and have a chance to win out and be a 9-win football team and maybe get into the playoffs.
Yeah, back to what you were saying about critical. Like I think in general, most people that don't like Justin Fields are very critical about every little thing he does. And I think that's just honest. Like I look at what Jalen Hurts, you know, playing yesterday, and I look at Josh Allen, even Patrick Mahomes at times. They make a lot of mistakes, and people just aren't as critical on them as they are on a guy like Justin Fields. And you know, people get to the record and they get to this. But I just think because of the Trubisky situation, people are very nervous that this is the same thing all over again. And I'll tell you, this ain't the same thing as Trubisky. I promise you that. Justin Fields is way more talented. And when you see the progression from him, Braggs, a couple of years ago, we would see Justin Fields throwing some picks and some errant throws. We're not seeing him throw the interceptions like that, right? Does he have to get better about not holding the football, right? I think every mobile quarterback has that issue, right? Because they think they can extend plays. Josh Allen did the same thing where, you know, he extended the play too long. Somebody hit him. He threw an errant throw for a pick. I just think every quarterback that is mobile has that issue, right? Because they rely on their legs sometimes. I can get out of all these situations. So I think, yeah, he has to get better on that. But what I'm loving is the fact that he is not throwing picks recently, right? He hasn't been throwing picks. I love his decision-making. But in certain situations, when he took two of those sacks, I would like for him just to tuck it and go or throw it out of bounds, live to play another down, right? Yep. I think that's the thing that people get really angry about is that part of his game, which is something I think he needs to clean up. But I do think we're seeing progress from him. He was throwing some ropes out there. Darnell Mooney twice.
Yep.
Dropped footballs that he threw right on the money to him. Yep. You know, like you said, the pass to DJ Moore, some passes to Cole Kmet. He throws darts. You know, he's winning games. He's not turning the football over. You know, in the Minnesota game, he fumbled the ball twice. But what I like is his growth in the passing game. We're seeing that.
I guess the other question is, too, is it sustainable? Because I can hear Mark Carmen, you know, chirping in my ear. And it's like, you know, he has 50, 60 rushing yards, but he took a lot of tough hits. And at one point he got hit three plays in a row where they lost yardage, 3rd and 18, punt. Yep. And each time he got drove into the turf. One time it was right on his shoulder and he came to the sidelines grimacing. That's the other half of this equation is as great as his playmaking ability is it sustainable? And again, Trevor Lawrence is hurt. Joe Burrow is hurt. Justin Herbert got hurt this week. You know, everybody's takes a lick. So I don't even know if that's fair to put against him to act like whoever they got as another quarterback, would he get hurt? You know, so But that is the other question I think that has to be answered. Well, is his play sustainable?
Can I ask you one thing? Why is Luke Getsy doing so many inside runs with Justin Fields? That's what I don't understand, right? When you look at trying to protect your mobile quarterback, you want to get him on the edge. So quarterback power, quarterback dive, what the heck is that? That's what I don't understand. Like in that situation, Justin Fields, when he's done the best and he's preserved his body, not taking these crazy hits, is when he's one-on-one on the edge on an outside linebacker or a defensive end. That makes more sense as opposed to a quarterback power. He almost got decapitated twice on those situations. So I just don't understand that, right? Why not get him on the move on some boots with some option to run or pass? Like, that's a situation where you can avoid some of those bigger hits. When you're running downhill power play, somebody gets penetration and you're going to get destroyed. So I really don't like those design runs. I like them more on the edge because then it gives an option to get out of bounds, to slide, to get down and not take some of those bigger hits.
Yep. And then someone brought up here earlier in the chat and I highlighted it. Kay Ann said, did you guys see that Flus and Brisker both were unhappy and talked about the late hits against Fields during the games? And the first play of the game, he slides. And I think he's gotten a little better with at least his slide technique. Mm-hmm. And for the first year or two, it seemed like he didn't have like good baseball slide technique. And now I've seen that here a lot this year. I think he's gotten much better at that. He slides on the first play and gets hit and doesn't get a flag. He gets hit out of bounds. He gets hit helmet to helmet at times, you know, after the throw. It's never called. What is it with Justin Fields that other quarterbacks get the call and he doesn't? I mean, I don't get it.
Yeah, because any mobile quarterback, you look Jalen Hurts, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, oh, then we got all those calls when he got pushed out of bounds, the one where 34, the guy with the long hair, what's his last name again from Detroit?
Anzalone.
When he hit him and everyone said, oh, well, and Campbell hit him in that. I'm like, listen, every other quarterback would have got those calls. Justin Fields isn't getting those calls. So there's the thing. And people say, oh, well, he didn't slide. You slow it down. He's obviously sliding. And they wanted to give him some extra because as a defender, when somebody slides, you can go over the top of them easy and you're not going to hurt yourself. Right. Mm-hmm. They knew exactly what they're doing. They're like, hey, we're going to try to rough him up. He was running all over us last time. We got to send a message. And in this game, they usually call it every time. It's not like back in the day where if a quarterback is running, it's free reign. If a quarterback gives himself up, you can't hit him. You can't hit him in the head. Can't go for his head. And that's what they were doing all game. And it's just surprising because if Jared Goff did that, oh, they would call that in a heartbeat. Right? If he's scrambling to the side, flag.
100%.
So they need to put some respect on his name, right? And I think everybody in general, because Braggs, this is all starting to play out like I told you. I've been very big on Justin Fields and what he can do. And I think he's continually showing what he can do, like as a player, as a quarterback, as a leader. And I just want him to continue finish his season well. So then that way there's no doubt in anybody's mind that he's the guy moving forward. Because you got to ask yourself this question when you're talking about draft and evaluation. Is Caleb Williams, is Drake May better than him? I don't believe so.
That's the question for Ryan Poles, 100%.
And I don't believe so. I don't. Not right now. And the thing is, you look at how this team's playing. If they continue to play that way, right, defensively, offensively, and then you continue building, all of a sudden this team – looks pretty dang good. And I think Justin Fields is just such a talented guy that as a former defensive lineman, trying to go against him, that keep you up at night, right? And I guarantee you that Detroit coordinator was losing sleep about preparing for Justin Fields. Yep. And a lot of people wouldn't want to play him just because of what he can do with his legs, how he can beat you. And now he's continuing to improve as a passer. So I like the way he's progressing.
And we know the Lions don't want to play him because he gives the Lions fits.
Yeah.
You know, that's the one thing he has been doing, even though Lions have snuck away with some wins here the last couple of years. But it seems like those days are dwindling for the Bears. You know, Darnell Wright was, I just am so impressed by him when he got the ball on that fumble and laid this dude that's like 6'8", 280 or something, completely obliterated this dude before he got tackled. I mean, stonewalling Aiden Hutchinson more than a few times in this game. I mean,
yeah, he got beat a few times though too. Like,
yeah. I don't expect perfection out of him, but you know, no. I just am so impressed by this guy.
No. I like, you know, and I think it gets skewed sometimes because when an offensive lineman gets beat one time, you think it's the end of the world. In reality, it was one play. So Aiden Hutchinson is a talented guy. You know, and he had a jump on the snap on a couple plays. As you've seen, the one play though, where he completely bull rushed Nate Davis. Oh my goodness. He had him on skates, hit Fields arm, and you know, hats off to him. He's a talented player. But you look at some of the plays, Hutchinson, right? He went inside on a couple plays where Justin Fields scrambled for first downs. And you know, he did big things that were undisciplined, especially when you're talking about preparing for a guy like Justin Fields. Contain is a non-negotiable, right? If you're going against him, and we saw a couple plays where he makes an inside move. And you could tell there was no one covering them in that situation, right? Or maybe their lack of communication. So, hats off to him. He's a great player. And I do like Wright. I like Braxton Jones got beat one time kind of bad, and that was a big play. But, hey, it's one play. Not everybody's going to be perfect every time. I think for the most part, he played pretty well in that game. So, I still feel pretty confident about him going forward as the left tackle of the future. And, you know, Nate Davis, I'm still on the fence about, like, honestly, like, I think, I don't know. I mean, I think we got to see how he is next
year. Well, he's not going anywhere. I mean, they signed him to a 4-year deal. Yeah. He's here.
But we got to see how he is next year. He missed a lot of training camp. He missed a lot of practice. It's tough. I think that's honestly, you were talking about the defense, how you talked about that play with Carla Gordon, right? We tapped his head and there's communication. The first 4 weeks, we did not see that at all. How many blown coverage? How many missed assignments were there?
Right.
And that's something not only the Bears are doing, you saw that consistent with majority of teams out there in the league. I think the preseason is killing things. Like, I think it's good for people's health and people are trying to stay injury free. I think what it's doing is once the season starts, there's people that are very rusty. They don't have the reps out there. They're not working all together. The communication, moving parts, because practice is one thing, right? You have 10 plays. You do a play, you come back to the huddle, do another play. It's not like the rhythm of a game. So it's very different and you're not able to get in that same shape and work
together. I agree. I completely agree.
I honestly, and this is a hot topic, and a lot of people are going to push back, especially former players, but I do think guys need to play more in the preseason. I do. I don't really think,
is it preventing injury in the preseason or during camp? Yeah, but it's not preventing injury during the year. There's just as much injury.
A lot of ACLs, Achilles.
Somebody's going to have to pull the statistics out for me, but I don't think – like the injuries are on a downswing from them eliminating a preseason game. I think offseason injuries are down as the Packers just get pushed out of bounds here. Looks like they might have a turnover on downs as Packers and Giants are in the first quarter. So we appreciate you guys hanging out with us, but I agree with you as far as the, you know, and it's going to be one of those kind of necessary evils. Like I agree with you that I don't think it's helping the game, but I don't think it's only going to get worse. I think they're going to eliminate another preseason game and add another regular season game to the schedule. Eventually it's gone up to 17 games. I think eventually it'll be an 18 game season schedule and teams might start having two byes in their season. Yeah. And I think they're going to keep getting softer and softer with their preseason, you know, commitments to the players and driving down training camp.
Or my thing is like this: if you don't want them to play in preseason games, like let's just say, you know how a lot of times they do the inter squad scrimmages with a different team. Do two to three of those during training camp with the team and go. You're 11 on 11. We're going full tilt. Obviously, we're not tackling, but we're working through everything full speed, right up to a thud. So that way you're getting in the rhythm of going against another offense, because that becomes a thing too. everybody knows what each other is doing, right? What the Bears offense is doing and vice versa. The Bears offense knows what the Bears defense is doing. So you're going against a different 11. You have to worry about what they're doing. You don't know all their tendencies and all that. So it gives you something new to think about. You got to play full tilt, you know, up to the whistle, you're thudding. So you, I think it's a safer way to get more great reps without sacrificing your risk for injury.
Yep. Dr. Truth says, great point, Woot. The current offseason seems to be worthless, unfortunately. But our viewers are not worthless, and we appreciate you guys tuning in. So please hit that like button while you're here. If you haven't already, subscribe. The Packers, of course, gave them the first down, so now the Packers are getting into scoring territory as we root against the Giants to keep the Bears' playoff hopes alive with every game that counts. And so, you know, another thing that always counts is make sure you hit up Circa Sports. Our guys over at Circa Sports always helping us out here and showing us some love. And they've been part of our tailgates this year, Corey. They've been great partners to everything we've been trying to do. So make sure you're showing them some love if you come on out to one of our live events. They've been there as well. And, you know, the other thing you make sure you got to do is hit up their app, their Circa Sportsbook app, now that they're in Illinois. Tight money line splits. Games strive to be a minus 110 split on the Circa Sports menu, unlike other sports books, which may use a minus 115 or minus 120 split. Circa Sports keeps as little money as possible on large market bets, especially compared to other books. Circa Sports does not limit players based on their winnings. Every player has the same limits, unlike other books who do limit winning players. They're very transparent. They encourage all bettors to download and explore all sports betting apps available and go compare the lines from each sports book yourself. Real people behind the Circa Sports brand who resolve issues in a timely fashion, unlike other books who use those annoying chat bots. All aspects of the app are being run by the same team that runs the main Circa Sportsbook at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. So download the Circa Sports Illinois app at circasports.com/Illinois-app to sign up today. Also, be on the lookout for Circa events, watch parties, and tailgates. If you or someone you may know has a gambling problem with gambling, call 1-800-GAMBLER or text GAMB to 833-234 or visit areyoureallywinning.com. All right, we're rolling along. I've got a couple questions for you here. Tanner Smith, $10 super chat. Be honest, it was nice that our D shut down David Montgomery and humbled Kendall Vildor, two former Bears. Yeah, it was for me because, you know, I've been the guy that said we could move on from David Montgomery, and then Adam Hogue kind of created this whole rivalry with me and David Montgomery. I like David Montgomery, but I was glad he didn't get in the end zone yesterday because then I didn't have to hear Hogue's shit about us letting him go. I always liked Kendall Vildor. Everybody else hated him, but I liked him.
But, hey, we didn't shut down David Montgomery. I mean, he averaged almost 7 yards a pop. So let's pump the brakes on. We shut him down. He had a pretty effective game.
They were trying to close the door on the game, and Adam and Marks, when we watch games at the studio with them, like, I want to just get fired up and be this caveman fan that I've always been and just scream at the TV. And Adam and Mark always at some point pivot to how can we piss Greg off while we're watching this game? And so while they were up two scores, Adam's like, Lions are going to come back, Greg. And I'm like, shut up, Hogue. Like, and when David Montgomery broke some of those tackles, Corey, on Jaquan Brisker, I was losing it because it was 3rd and 10 and they did like a little drop down check down to him and he breaks two tackles and gets the first down. And it's like, all those little signs, I was just so nervous they were going to blow it like they did in Detroit. Luckily, they didn't. But you're right. David Montgomery did have, even though he didn't get in the pay dirt, did have a very solid game.
Exactly. Yeah, it was I think it's one of the type of things that like people were didn't want to see him leave. But look at the talented running back we got in Foreman, right? Look at Roschon Johnson at times and Khalil Herbert. So running backs nowadays are a dime a dozen. And that's one position, unless you're just such a dynamic guy that like changes the game. A guy like David Montgomery, he had a great role. And I just don't think he's that dynamic a player where you have to get him and you can't replace him. I think the Bears have been fine without him.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be something in Chicago. Then they continue to roll over the running backs. Khalil Herbert's a solid running back, but even he's starting to lose carries this year to Deontay Foreman, a guy that's been around the league, had success. And then you also have, you know, Roschon Johnson, who's an ascending rookie, who's going to eventually start taking the veterans' jobs and so on and so forth. I think the Jim Harbaugh dream might end here with Matt Eberflus maybe keeping his job next year. But if he did come here, I was looking at Frank Gore Jr. coming out of college here this year, you know, bring him, pair him with Jim Harbaugh. But I don't know. I think my Harbaugh dream is starting to dwindle. So, Corey, we've talked about the whole roster. We've talked about the win against Detroit. You know, the title of the show was Brick by Brick. Obviously, you know, it's something.
Obviously, because, you know, I'm Brick Boy.
Goddamn right, I'm Brick Boy. So I ask you this, you know, and I think I know your answer, but just kind of want you to expand on it. How much do you trust Ryan Poles, no matter what you think about all this coaching, quarterback are going to be big decisions. But when you see the way this defense is coming together, you see the way this team is coming together, you see the way Justin Fields is starting to develop. You see the way this offensive line is starting to come together. You know, it was hard to see it at times, especially when they came out the gates so strugglesome. But do you believe that Ryan Poles can build a championship team here in Chicago?
I think everybody was very critical on him, especially when the season wasn't going the way we wanted to, and certain things didn't shake out how we thought, right? Especially I was very critical because I think he left out the defensive line to dry, and everyone's like, well, he drafted two guys and he got Yannick, he got all this, but really how much emphasis did he put on there? Like getting studs on there. I didn't see that. Right. Then all of a sudden he brings in Sweat, and then Dexter, his guy he drafted, is playing really well. Right. Yep. And we see Yannick playing well. With Sweat going opposite him, right? We see Pickens in there making plays. Justin Jones elevating his game. And I think that's what it was is missing. So, obviously, him trading for Montez Sweat, I love that. I like the DJ Moore acquisition, right? I've liked some of his things that he's done, for sure. Some of the draft picks that are developing well, like Braxton Jones, you know. So, Darnell Wright, love that pick. He's really building my trust with what the direction of the team he's going with. And I'm just hoping that I said this last year. I said, this next upcoming offseason and draft is such a monumental year, critical, pivotal year for Ryan Poles and how he's going to place this team for set them up for the next, you know, 5 years, really, in what he does. Right, three to 5 years, what he does this offseason, right? If he can continue developing that defensive line, if he can add another weapon offensively, if he can get that center position, I think this is a critical year for Ryan Poles' career and kind of the trajectory of the Bears. I think this is going to be a year where it could potentially ascend them into where they need to be and where we thought they could be. Yep. So I'm looking forward to it. I think he is going to address this. I honestly think right now, in his position, he's in a great position. Again, they got two first round picks with a for sure first overall again. It's looking like unless something else happens crazy. But that's a great situation because if Justin Fields is your guy, you have so many options at that point, right? If he feels like he's his guy, you have so many options, right? You could pull the trigger on Marvin Harrison Jr. You can trade back and get some other picks. I'm looking at the guy from Illinois, Jershon Newton, Johnny Newton.
Yep.
Imagine him in that three technique, Tampa 2. Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo. Montez Sweat on the other side. We get another pass rusher. Bro, oh, my goodness. You get me fired up, man. I might have to strap him up right now.
But dude.
Johnny Newton, man. Obviously, being from the Big Ten and watching the Big Ten and seeing him play, unbelievable. Like, he probably could have came out last year and been a first round pick. Like, right. That talented as a sophomore. Unbelievable talent, quickness, hand usage, Braggs. The hand usage. When I look at a lot of these college guys, I see how they're working their second, third moves, the quickness inside, how he sets guys up, how he plays the run game. He would be a great fit for this Tampa 2-3 technique. And coming to the first round, Johnny Newton, Chicago Bears. Woo, we go nuts, go crazy. Oh, man, that would be a perfect fit. Like, honestly, like, I think he's the guy I want as a defensive lineman if they're going to draft and pull the trigger right now.
Right.
Over a defensive end right now. If they had the choice between him and a D-end, Johnny Newton. Because the three technique is the engine that runs that defense. And obviously, hopefully, ideal situation. Free agency, they get the defensive end, they get a center position. Boom, we got that wiped out, right? Marvin Harrison Jr., first overall pick, Johnny Newton. And it's right off into the sunset, yeah, baby.
Let's roll. I mean, I definitely, like I said, I think that that scenario has a lot of intrigue to it. And it's going to be interesting to see how it all breaks down. It's exciting. The Bears are in a really good spot. If they can continue to scratch and claw and stay in playoff contention and have the number one pick, I don't really see how anyone, even when you consider some of the mistakes that Ryan Poles has made, because he hasn't been perfect, not buying into what he's doing here lately, because it's very encouraging and you're starting to see the vision on how this roster is starting to get built, and even starting to see the vision on what he saw in Matt Eberflus as a head coach, because the team is really starting to come together and you're hearing some things from some of the players about how they're really buying in. Montez Sweat spoke very highly of Matt Eberflus. You saw Montez Sweat have Justin Fields back on the sidelines, trying to fight one of the Lions players. So you see how he's already all bought in. Jaquan Brisker laying his health and safety on the line every week. And he talked about today how hard he wants to play for Matt Eberflus, 17 tackles all over the field. You know, that stuff, that kind of effort is contagious. And I think it really is starting to spread around that locker room. You add that fuel to the fire that's starting to ignite here with some additions like you just mentioned. And I think that the Chicago Bears are really onto something. So it's exciting stuff. Before we go, looking ahead to the Browns, how familiar are you with Cleveland? They just had a big win at home against Jacksonville over Trevor Lawrence, who somehow was able to play after having a high ankle sprain. It looked like he was going to be out. Mm-hmm. And Joe Flacco, they just picked him up off the street. And Joe Flacco, former Super Bowl champion with the Ravens, is slinging it. They don't have DeJuan Jones, their rookie tackle, who a lot of people were considering for the Bears to take. Mm-hmm. And instead, the Bears take Darnell Wright. Now, he's out for a year. So that's going to hurt with this pass rush really starting to take form for the Bears. The other thing I saw before I let you kind of give the breakdown with some of the highlights as I watched through the Browns-Jaguars game, it seemed like they caught the Jaguars with, they were blitzing a few times, and that left some players wide open for Cleveland. Mm-hmm. Their tight end,
Njoku.
Njoku got loose a couple times on him, and Flacco delivered it off the blitz and was able to stay calm, cool, and collected back there. How do you see this matchup playing out? Because I just look at it as such a big hurdle game, an opportunity to win three in a row, four of your last five, as you head into Soldier Field to take on the Cardinals and Falcons. If you lose, then the air gets let out of the balloon, and we're back to talking about what they're going to do in the offseason, and I'm trying to convince you about Caleb Williams and all this crap that I don't want to talk about right now. Yeah. So it's just such a big hurdle game. I just want to hear your thoughts on what you think of Cleveland and the Bears' chances to win that game.
So Cleveland, right? Obviously, we know they got Flacco coming and he's off the street. So this will be a huge game defensively. I kind of like the same recipe as they had for Detroit, right? Joe Flacco is a guy, even when he's playing in his prime, really struggled against pressure. So if I'm Eberflus and company, I'm going to have that same game plan, right? I'm going to generate pressure with that front four. I'm going to bring some blitzers here and there, but continue to knock out that run game, right? Ford has kind of seemed to be the main back for them. He's averaging almost 5 yards a pop, so he can get you a little bit. So I think if they're able to stop the run, which is something they've done consistently, I know this Detroit game, they struggled a little bit with some of the gashing runs, with Gibbs and Montgomery. Mm-hmm. This week, you really stopped the run. If they can do that, they can get after Joe Flacco and company. I really do believe that. But, you know, I think what I worry about the most is kind of that matchup with Njoku, because he's a guy that's really come on late. Like, he was a guy that's like, you look at him, freaking nature, right? Can run, can jump, can do everything. Strong, freak athlete. And he's kind of never put up the numbers. And this year, it's finally coming forward with him, right? We're finally seeing him. He's got over 600 yards, 4 touchdowns. He has 59 receptions this year. So we're finally seeing him really starting to make his mark in Cleveland, something that he struggled to do in the past couple of years. So they're really starting to utilize him, especially in that red zone, on kind of those zone beaters down the seam. So I think he's a guy they got to watch out. Obviously, they got Amari Cooper. He's a talented guy, but he doesn't really scare me as much. The matchup this week, I'm looking at David Njoku, right? Because I think he is a nightmare matchup, especially one-on-one on linebacker or potentially a safety, because he can run like a deer. He's 6'4", 6'5", about 250, 260, solid, and he's really starting to come alive. So Bears stop the run, be able to generate the pressure, and I really think that this is a very winnable game for them. And then on the offensive side of the ball, continue with that same plan, right? I thought Getsy, for the most part, had a pretty good plan offensively, right? Stick with the run game. Let's work the quick rhythm throws, which Justin Fields likes, and let's get him on the move a little bit. When he's running, no inside power, none of that. I want to see him on the edge, right? One-on-one on a defensive end. I like that matchup. So then he has the option to get out of bounds, to slide, to get down. He's not taking those crazy hits. And work with Cole Kmet. Cole Kmet has been a security blanket for Justin Fields. How many times has he gotten himself open in situations beating that zone? So continue to rely on him. DJ Moore, you know what? He's going to continue to show up and be that dynamic playmaker. But Darnell Mooney, we need you to step up now. There was two opportunities where you dropped some balls that were right at you. So really utilize on that. And I think this is a game where they can continue to build the momentum. And Bragg, sometimes all it takes is that I honestly think the Vikings game was a critical game, right? Because even despite how many times have we seen that situation where, yeah, it looks like the Bears should win this game, but they don't, right? I guarantee you were thinking that. I guarantee you everybody in this chat watching right now thought that same thing. Oh, the Bears are going to lose it. But they found a way to finish it. And I think that's just huge for the confidence of the team, knowing that you didn't play well offensively. You played pretty bad, and you were still able to close out that game. And then you look at what they did against Detroit this past week, which is huge for this team. So I think they got the confidence now. Defensively, they're playing on a different level. I think this was a huge game for the offense to be able to finish, right, when defense kept getting stops. You know, there's always that lull where we're thinking, oh, this is kind of 15 points. It looked very similar to the last Lions game. And then all of a sudden, they were able to finish the game and close it out. So I think this is a huge step for the Bears. Think about if they can continue to stack wins and go into this offseason, like I said to the start of the show, how Detroit was last year. And then all of a sudden, everybody is going to feel a lot better about this Bears team, feel a lot better about Eberflus, this defense, Justin Fields, and the direction of where the Bears are going. Mute.
I'm sorry. I keep doing that today. I'm throwing off my game.
It's brick by brick tonight. It's my my tagline.
Come on, bro.
It's our tagline. We're family. No, here
it's your Bears. It's yours. Brick by brick, brick juice. You know, have it your way.
I know when we clinched the number one pick last year. I mean, you got to witness me completely lose my mind. I'm yelling brick juice. We're not even gonna have that moment this year, I feel like, because it's just they're gonna clinch it way before the last week of the season. It's honestly a miracle. It's like one of these things that just never happens to the Chicago Bears or Chicago teams in general.
Never.
But no, I agree with you. We'll wrap things up here. But you know, as much as I don't want to think about the offseason anymore, I'm doing my best to not think about the losses they've squandered, because they really could be like in the playoffs right now.
Yeah.
And just appreciate that they are where they are, and maybe some of those trials and tribulations has helped them, like you said, learn to overcome some of that adversity. And now you have an opportunity you just had your bye. You're as healthy as you've been all year. You're starting to get hot. Team's starting to believe in each other. You beat the Browns in Cleveland. You're coming back to Soldier Field with your hair on fire. And the Cardinals are probably walking into a buzzsaw that Christmas Eve afternoon. Yeah, I mean, seriously, I believe it, you know. And so this is the big game that I have like this question, like, of how they're, but I feel good about it. I think I am going to pick the Bears to win. Carm's already trying to give me shit about it. He's like, let's bet then. I'm like, all right, Carm, we'll bet. I feel good.
Negative Nancy over there. He didn't.
Oh, you should have seen him today on the afternoon show. He's still full of doubt, and he's making fun of anybody with a semblance of hope. Won't just let Bears fans enjoy their victory Monday.
Dude, what is up with him, man? He wakes up on the wrong side of the bed pretty much every day, it seems like.
Yeah,
somebody cram, you know, like.
Yep.
It's unbelievable, though. I guarantee you, like, it's funny because on Twitter, people were saying, hey, if Bajan was playing, you know, Carm would have picked them to win.
Well, when they showed Bajan on the sideline right before halftime, his face lit up like it's his child or something. Like,
yeah, let's pump the brakes, man. I like Bajan. I think he's a good backup. I think he can win you a game where you manage the game and you do some things. But Carm loves him. That's his guy. That's his guy.
Well, if there's anything we've learned in 2 years of working with Carm, is that he's an odd fellow. So that wraps things up for the night. We'll let everybody get to rooting against the Packers. Looks like Jordan Love might have just fumbled the football. Of course, the refs called him down, but from the replay I'm looking at right now, it didn't look like he was down. But you know how that goes with Green Bay. So we're going to direct our attention to the Packers-Giants game. Giants putting up a fight. It's tied 7-7. We appreciate everyone tuning in once again here on a Monday night for Bears After Dark. Please hit that like button if you haven't already. Subscribe. We're trying to the march to 50K on our CHGO Sports YouTube channel. We're climbing. We're climbing, Corey, just like the Bears are. So we'll wrap things up here tonight. Tomorrow afternoon at noon, 12 p.m. Central, Cole Kmet joins Adam Hogue, Mark Carmen, and myself. So we'll be talking to one of the best tight ends in football for your Chicago. Well,
one of these times, man, when I'm not busy, I'm gonna have to call in on the show and talk about man Cole Kmet, talk a little ball with him.
Yeah, we'll set it. I'll text Hogue and mention it to him. I'm sure.
So not tomorrow, but I think that the following week I might be able to. So
okay, all right, we'll get that set up. I'll work it out for you. You know, yeah, Corey, you're my guy. We become good friends. I go around telling all sorts of people I'm friends with Corey Wooten. That's what I do.
They ask me and I'm like, no. He just laid some bricks.
That's how I introduce myself to people. I'm like, I'm Corey Wooten's friend, Greg Braggs. That's how I introduce myself. So you're stuck with me now. So I appreciate you. Thanks for all the the football wisdom you share. My football brain gets bigger every Monday. So thank you to all in the chat once again. We'll see you here tomorrow at 12 p.m. Central. Bear down, ladies and gentlemen. We all silly like the mayor.